Cape Talk. Fabulous life.
Now, it is such a great pleasure to welcome to our studios today one of this country's most outstanding artists in the field of sculpture. Jean Doyle has been producing works in bronze for decades now. Her pieces are located all over the world. They include a number of hugely famous and dearly loved works, the likes of the statue of Just Nuisance in Simonstown, the monument to Madiba outside the Groot Drakenstein prison. She's very well known for her works depicting the fuller figured female body. She has had solo exhibitions, been part of numerous group exhibitions. Her work is in private collections all over the world. And I'm so delighted to have her with us today to talk about her career and the story behind some of those real signature pieces. Jean, thank you so much for your time. Lovely to have you with us.
Lovely to be here.
How did you first become interested in sculpture? Were you a little girl playing and carving things and creating them out of the mud, or did it come later than that?
No, I started very early. Mm-hmm. My father was an artist. Not a professional artist, but he had exhibitions, and he was a very good craftsman as well. And I used to sit underneath his easel while he was painting and knocked up old boxes together to make his frames for his pictures.
Oh, wow.
But he taught me all sorts of crafts, and sculpting was one of them. And I always knew I was going to be an artist of some sort, but I never knew which direction I would go.
So what was it then that pushed you in the direction of sculpting, and particularly the kind of sculpting, which we'll get to in just a minute? It's quite an intriguing process. But what pushed you in that direction in the end?
It was while I was in Johannesburg having an exhibition of paintings. Mm-hmm. And at the hotel where I was staying at, there was a swimming pool, and I used to sit down at the swimming pool and watch the people there. And one morning, a woman came down, and I couldn't take my eyes off her. She was just too elegant and extravagant. Mm-hmm. She had her hair piled up, and she had chunks of gold and various parts of her anatomy, killer heels, and a very small bikini, more like a thong. But she was very large, and she walked with such confidence and such grace and such elegance. I thought it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Mm. And I felt I just had to portray her. And painting wasn't enough. I needed another dimension. Mm. So I went back home and bought a bag of clay, and I sculpted her, and I think I've been circling her ever since.
I wonder if she knows that she was the inspiration behind this amazing international career.
I'm sure not.
I'm sure not, but somewhere out there is the lady in the thong. Maybe she's listening today and wondering if it was her. I hope she is at some level. We were talking just before the break about cabinet ministers, and our reporter made a comment about a woman in a man's world. The same could, to a degree, be said of you in the early days, because the particular kind of casting that you do saw you become the very first woman in South Africa to be entered into the South African Institute of Foundrymen back in the 1970s. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Well, that was all something of a challenge. I came back home, and I had my sculpture, and there wasn't an art foundry in Cape Town. So I thought I would be able to cast my own work. So I went into the industrial area and spoke to industrial foundries, but nobody was prepared to give me any information. Hmm. Until I came across somebody who had his training in a bill foundry. And builds and sculpture have got a very similar casting process. And he gave me all the details I needed. He gave me the temperatures, and I went to his foundry, and he showed me the whole casting process. And so I came back home, and I started. And I did quite a bit of casting. Not terribly good at that stage. Mm-hmm. A lot went straight back into the crucible. And then I went over to the States, and I went to a workshop with Professor Ron Young, and I worked in several art foundries there. And then I came back, and I built a foundry also in my back garden. And I worked there until we outgrew ourselves and moved to an industrial area.
What was it like to be the first woman admitted to the Institute of Foundrymen? Did you find that men continued to turn the cold shoulder to you in that?
Oh, yes. I wasn't terribly welcome. But I see now that there are several women who have been inducted into this holy of holies.
Followed in your footsteps. Well, no doubt they are nodding their heads in respect and thanking you for opening the door to them all those years ago. Maybe we need to take a step back and explain what we mean by the process of casting and how you actually create a sculpture. For those who don't know much about art, can you just explain the process for us of what you make?
I'll see if I can do it briefly without any demonstration material. One first makes a sculpture, and then it is painted with a rubber mold, a silicon rubber mold, which is the consistency of toothpaste. Mm-hmm. So you paint your entire sculpture with that. And then because it's so flexible, once it's cured, we put a resin jacket over it. Then we split it in two, take the original out, which we don't require any longer, and paint a thin layer of casting wax into both sides, and then put them together, swill it out so that the two sides weld together, and then open up the mold, and we have a hollow wax replica of the original, like an Easter egg. Mm-hmm. And then we put a gating system on it, which allows the metal to run in, and then we make, and risers to let the air out, and then we make another mold around that, around the outside and the inside, so that the wax is sandwiched in the middle. Then we melt out that wax, and we have the space in which we pour the molten metal bronze.
So it is a multi-layered process. I mean, it must take months on some of the bigger commissions you work on, because I know some of your statues stand 9 meters tall is the tallest one, if I'm correct. How long would it take you to create something like that?
Well, that took a year to both sculpt and cast. And, of course, I had a whole army of people assisting me. Mm-hmm. We had to hire a warehouse because my studio wasn't big enough. And I had architects and engineers and a host of craftsmen and sculptors to give me a hand. And once it had been sculpted and had been approved by the Angolan government, we started casting. My foundry wasn't able to cast such a large sculpture. We didn't have the facilities. Mm. So we cast it together with another art foundry.
And then how do you get, I mean, that had to go to Angola. How did it get there? What's the transport process like?
Well, it went in one of these big Russian Aleutian jobs.
Mm-hmm. By air?
By air.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
This has been a heavy plan. Yeah. Just for those who've joined us late to the conversation, I'm in conversation with Jean Doyle, renowned South African sculptor. One WhatsApp saying, I have a Jean Doyle, a statue, Art Deco that I absolutely love. I wish I could afford more. Well, what you can afford to do is go and visit some of her famous public statues, because really they are landmarks, not only in Cape Town, but all over the world. Just Nuisance is one that Cape Townians are very proud of, though, Jean. And that, tell us a little bit about the story of how you came to create that statue, which now stands in Jubilee Square.
There was a competition which was put out by the municipality in Simonstown, and it was an invitation to any South African to send in a maquette, which is a small replica of what you plan to do. And I was fortunate enough to win the competition. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, the grandfather of a school friend of mine owned Just Nuisance's mother.
Oh.
So there was a tie-up there.
Okay.
And my mother, during the war, used to work in Simonstown, and she traveled by train. And she used to travel with
Just Newson. So you had a very personal connection then. Now, I mean, that statue is absolutely beloved, and everybody was horrified when it lost its collar and cap not so long ago to thieves. Has anybody reached out to you about the possibility of replacing those?
Yes, I'm just at this moment resculpting the...
Oh, that's fantastic news.
Yes. There's a sponsor, a dog food company, who is arranging the whole thing.
Are we allowed to know who they are? I'd love to recognize them for that.
It is dog food.
Well, well done to them for making that happen, because I know at the time so many people were so distressed at what had happened. They'll be delighted to know that it is coming back. The other very, very famous work of yours here around Cape Town is Nelson Mandela's Long Walk to Freedom, which stands outside Groot Drakenstein Prison in Paarl, where he took those famous first steps to freedom. Talk to us about how you came to create that piece.
Well, this was commissioned by Turkey Sekwali. Now, he'd just been to Angola and seen the monument of the Battle of Kipengondo, and I'd done several other monuments for Angola as well. And he asked who the artist, who the sculptor was, because he would like to have one done. And they said, well, you'll find her back
home.
That's
funny.
So he approached me, and... I sculpted that in 2008, which was in fact 17 years after he had been released. So I couldn't work directly from images of him now, but I had to go back and sculpt him from the images of 17 years prior.
Wow. Did you ever get to meet him in person? Did you have any frame of actual reference?
Only after I had completed him.
Okay.
At the unveiling of the sculpture, I got to meet him, and it was the most thrilling experience. He was a charming, charming person, and he was quite frail by that time. Yeah. And his wife, Grace, was very gracious. So she jumped up and said, "You sit down next to him and talk to him." Which we did.
Was he happy with what you had produced?
Oh, he said he thought it looked like him. I was very pleased.
Have you ever had the opposite, Jean, where you've been commissioned to do a sculpture and the person is not happy with what came out at the end? Have you ever been in that position?
No, fortunately not.
Thankfully.
But, what I do is when I'm doing a portrait of someone who has since deceased, I try and get a family member to come and speak to me about him. And I've just done one for Malawi, Bingu Makirika. And his daughter came to see the sculpture before it was cast. And she told me about him as a father as a grandfather. And I could just adjust the sculpture from being such a political figure into a more personal side of him.
And that's going to stand at their parliamentary buildings in Malawi,
and
is it not?
Yes, that's been unveiled.
It's been unveiled already. I mean, you've been working all over the continent, Jean. I know you've also just recently worked on pieces for the Seychelles, I think it is. And of course, there's also, we must mention, the version of Madiba that stands outside the US, the South African Embassy in Washington, D.C. in the USA. How did that come about? Did they become aware, the South African Embassy officials there, see the statue at Paarl and say, we want one?
Yes, yes. Okay. And so they've got a replica of the one that's at Paarl.
Were you able to recast that replica from the existing...
Yes, from the existing mold.
Mold, okay. So that, I mean, that is an interesting process, that you create the original sculpture, but then you can replicate it. Is there an infinite number of times it can be replicated from that original mold?
Well, there is, but one wouldn't want to. For my own personal work, I do an edition of 9.
Okay.
And each sculpture is marked, and once I get to the 9th one, I destroy the mold.
Why 9 in particular?
That's
any
because
reason?
It's less than 10.
Okay. So it keeps them absolutely rare and special.
Yes.
And you literally destroy the mold. What does it take to destroy a mold like that?
Well, a pair of scissors, cut up the rubber.
And do you have, what does it feel like for you getting to the end of that process? It must be almost quite ceremonial for you, I would imagine.
Not really. By the time I've cast six of these, nine of these pieces, I've really had enough of them.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about where your pieces can be viewed by the public, besides the one or two really famous ones that I've mentioned. If listeners are going, I'd love to see more of the work, particularly I would love to see more of the beautiful women's bodies. Well, one thing they can do is get a hold of a copy of the book, Jean Doyle, A Portrait, written by Grace Powell and published by Quivetry. And as I always say on the show, you know, if it's a Quivetry book, it is a thing of beauty. It is beautifully crafted, beautifully photographed and produced. So the book is still available if you would like to see the works on the page. But of course, these are 3D works that are best enjoyed face-to-face. Where do our listeners see them? Are there museums in Cape Town where they can go and have a look at your work?
Well, I have a sculpture garden at home.
Okay.
And visitors can come there and see my studio and my workshops. And if they're interested, we take them to the foundry and show them how we cast the work. Mm. So I get groups of tourists and groups of people coming to view my work at home. I've got work in several galleries and several wine farms. In Johannesburg, my work is at Julie Miller.
Okay.
And but most of my work I have at home.
All right. So where, if somebody would like to, is really interested and would like to come and have a look, is there a website we can direct them
to? Yes, there's a website, jeandoyle.co.za.
And the Doyle is spelled D-O-Y-L-E, everybody. Jean Doyle says an SMS, voluptuous Botticelli-like female figures, especially her African tribal women series, are such a celebration of female beauty, especially in our size zero world. She is a South African treasure. I'm so glad you sent that SMS, and you have kind of stolen what was going to be my final question, which is, the inspiration for it all was this wonderful, voluptuous, full-figured woman. You've never moved away from that representation of the female body. Is it because, as you say, she is still there in your head informing your work, or is that a deliberate decision to not represent women in the very constricted way that the media usually shows them?
Well, I like to sculpt them as exuberant and confident. And doing it in large scale can portray a spiritual essence which reflects in the largeness of the sculpture.
Beautifully put. Jean's final question is, if there is anybody that you would still very much love to sculpt that you haven't had the chance to do yet?
I'd love to sculpt a monument of a woman. All the monuments I've done have been of men. And I think we need some women monuments.
Right, I'm hoping somebody listening is starting some wheels turning in their head going, I know where that should be, and I know where we're going to find the budget, and let's make it happen. I look forward to the day we get to talk to you at the unveiling of that monument, wherever and whenever that will be. Jean Doyle, thank you so much for joining us today.